everyone, and welcome to episode 104 of season 11 of Movie Around Midnight, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off her three-episode arc is Tierney Steele of One Steele Sister. Welcome back once again, Tierney.
Thank you for having me. I love that you call it a three-episode arc. Like, I feel like I should have done some character development as the week went on.
you could try. You know, I don't know how much of character arcs we're getting in these 15 minutes, but you never know.
They're a great 15 minutes, and I love that yesterday he was like, it might be over in as little as 10 minutes, and I'm like, yeah, it might. Less than, actually.
You should be saying, I hope it's over in 10 minutes, because then I'm not on anymore.
Yeah. No, we literally time it out, and spoiler alert for the end of this episode, they're back at the boat, so.
That's right. That's very good. And so episode 104 begins with the men moving forward through the snow and ends with the men loading the prisoners into the boat. So we ended things yesterday with them beginning their, I guess you can call it the last patrol, moving across the river, having a few of the guys fall into the water and not make it across. But enough of them still do make it across. And, you know, after cutting the barbed wire, they're moving through the snow on the ground in order to try and reach their objective in order to capture these prisoners that they want.
Yeah, which this always reminds me of when I was in college, I went to the University of Connecticut, which has a working dairy farm like across the street. And so Horse Barn Hill was the best sledding spot. Whenever it snowed, that was where you wanted to go. But you had to go under a series of fences to get to it. And so you would have to like get down and do the army crawl underneath. And I remember looking at my friend one time and being like, why are we doing this? Like, we're cold, we're wet, because we're not like properly dressed. You know, we're a bunch of drunk college students. And I was like, when did we end up in the Battle of the Bulge? And then, like, years later, I'm watching the actual Battle of the Bulge as depicted in this miniseries. And I'm like, that was wildly insensitive of me.
Well, I don't think any of the guys from Easy Company heard you say it when you were, drunkenly.
In 2004. But yeah, watching them do the army crawl on your elbows, it took me right back. I'm like, yeah, no, I see why my brain made that connection.
Makes sense.
The other thing that I love is like as they run around, the snow sticks to them, and my other personal anecdote for this section is that I was working at Wheelock College in Boston, Massachusetts when they filmed The Social Network, and it was the summer, they had to make it look like winter in Boston. This fake snow sticks to everything. People tracked it in for weeks after production ended. I mean, we were fighting for our lives trying to keep the fake snow out of the library at that library entrance. And so watching these guys run with the fake snow stuck to their uniforms, I'm just like, yeah, that's real.
So, the snow here is not real. if you were wondering.
The fake snow is real, is what I'm saying.
Exactly. And, they move through, and Martin is leading them, and Martin goes, clear, easy now, clear. And he goes, Powers, go, McClung, move up, in twos, up. And he goes, Powers, win, secure the left flank. And he goes, Lieutenant, Grant and Heffron, secure the right perimeter and the crossroads, clear. Security out. Go. Move. So, I mean, Martin, first of all, I'm somewhat happy that they sent Martin instead of Malarkey, because Martin really knows what he's doing there. and obviously better than Joe.
I have that note later in the same section that Sergeant Martin is really good at this, though. I like this moment with Jones, because it does this job of beautifully conveying, like, yes, Jones is wide-eyed. He is green. This is his first time in combat. But Martin is giving him a job that he would have done as part of an exercise so many times. And I love that you see it in his
That's right.
eyes when Martin tells him, like, take the flank. Like, you almost see his brain being like, I know how to do that. Like, I
That's
can do
right. I
that.
learned
I can do that.
that.
I know what that means, and now I will go do it. And it's just the only he would have done so many training exercises like this at West Point. Like, he would have done exactly this except for the part where they're hiding from Germans. Like, he is a good soldier. Like, it's not that Jones is a bad soldier. It's just that Jones hasn't been in combat before. Like, there's nothing wrong with this guy other than it's his first day on the job.
That's right. And again, it
You
makes sense. That's what they need here. They need to have someone in charge who knows what they're
Yeah,
doing and
because
knows how to
they
move
don't
things
know that he's
forward.
gonna get their feet on this. So yeah, I get why they did not want him leading this, obviously. But I thought it was important. It was really nice that, like, the writers take that moment to show us, like, hey, this guy will be good at this. Like, this guy will be fine.
And I mean, he shakes his head also when he gives him the order. So Jones shakes his
It's
head
really
as if,
sweet.
okay, I understand exactly what you want me to do. So that works too. And then the men take off into all the directions they need to go. And Martin moves forward to the bottom of the building along with a few other men. They're getting ready for what they need to do. And Martin then puts on the rifle grenade. He attaches it to his gun, and he sees that as he's getting ready to shoot it, Jackson is just getting very, very impatient. So he shoots up the he shoots the rifle grenade into the window, and then Jackson takes off and starts running up running up the stairs. And as he opens up the door, there's a massive explosion, and Jackson gets thrown back.
He's like, Jackson, wait. And I'm like, my notes are, Jackson did not wait that face.
That's right. No. Jackson wait, then he did
Nope.
not. And you can see that he gets hit in the face by the blast. Not something you really need. And he just starts screaming. And the rest of the guys just move into the room. There are three Germans that are in the room, basically holding up their hands, and they start screaming at them, put it down and keep your hands out where I can see them. And they're just speaking German back to them. And then Martin screams to Webster, keep him quiet, keep the crowds quiet. And he goes over and to Jackson. We hear Jackson just crying, obviously. And then he turns to Vest and he goes, Vest, take care of him. And he goes, Ramirez, watch Vest. He goes, let's go, Webster, let's go, split him up, come on. He wants to keep the Germans
This is why
away
he
from each
is
other so that
so good
he
at
goes,
this. Like, he is getting it done.
yes.
He is getting it done fast. He is taking care of the person. Also, the fact that he's like, Vest, watch him, and then says, Ramirez, watch Vest. Like, he is like 3 steps ahead. I love it so much.
Because we see basically what he's dealing with here. I mean, the show is graphic in what they show when people are injured, and this is no exception to that. We see very graphically how Jackson's face is just hemorrhaging from the blast. But that adds so much to the realism of what we get to see here. And Martin sees this himself. He knows that the reason he wants Ramirez to watch Vest is just to make sure that Jackson is taken care of
Well,
as
we
much as
also
possible.
see Vest kind of freezing up a little bit and isn't.
Well, Vest is the
Yeah, this is
quartermaster,
his
so
first
again,
day too, or out here. So I think then that's the thing. In this situation, Martin is smart enough to know, like, okay, this guy is now incapacitated. He can do this. Someone watch him.
that's right. That's right. And then he goes, Webster, check him for weapons. He goes, cover me, McClung. And the Germans are still making a lot of noise, and he goes, keep those men
Webster's
quiet.
fake German is so funny.
McClung, cover him. And now he's giving more orders, and he goes, take the charges, prime them, bury it. And he goes, shut up, you two, and pick him up. Because one of the Germans is also slightly injured, and McClung, these two are going to carry the wounded crowd. He goes, hey, Webster, tell him. Bring the wounded men. And he screams, I said, shut up. Ramirez, pick up Jackson. We're moving out. Come on. Where are you going? You, Move. Everybody moves out on my command. You ready? You ready? Shut up. Come on. We all go together. Let's go. Move out. Move out. Let's go. Move, move. Again, Martin really takes the situation into hand with what he's doing here. You know, and then Webster speaks to them a little bit.
Bring them on.
Yeah, Webster, come on.
Oh, my God. I mean, because he's got a few real German words. The same one everyone, you know, like, stop or, you know, stay, you know. He has a few that everyone seems to have picked up, a few German words that they can shout, that they, you know, have heard. But yeah, when Martin starts telling him to give directions to the prisoners, he's just winging it. And it's a beautiful thing.
That's right. Exactly. And then they end up, you know, running out of the building, running down the stairs, taking the Germans with them. And he goes, Powers, fall back. We're moving out. McClung, keep those prisoners' heads down and let's keep moving. Win, fall back. We're moving out. Let's go. And we're falling back, covering fire. Now, I love how Martin remembers where he placed mm-hmm. all the men. So as he's moving past them, he tells them, okay, it's your turn to fall back. You move back. You. So again, it's just amazing the way that he does it. And then he goes, Heffron, I want you to fall back now. Let's go. Move out. Get back to the boat. I'll cover. Go. Keep the men moving.
I can't imagine how stressful this is for the German prisoners. I mean, you in this situation,
yes.
You've just got to assume you're going to get popped by someone, right? I mean, like, there's so much crossfire happening right now. And the two of them carrying the wounded man, I'm just like, this is just, I don't know. Obviously, they're the enemy, they're the bad guys, whatever. But I did feel for them where it's like, could you imagine having to run this gauntlet and with your own guy shooting at you, basically?
Well, your own guy, well, that's for the Germans, but the Americans haven't started shooting it because they're waiting for the whistle to
blow. No, at this point, it's your own, like, fellow soldier shooting at you. And I'm like, oh, no. Again, I'm too much of a mom for this show now. Like, oh, everyone go home. I am very much like, excuse me, you are not in the boats when the whistle starts, so.
Exactly. And Martin then turns to Jones and goes, Lieutenant, take the whistle. And you see that the whistle had fallen on the ground and he picks it up. Good thing he mm-hmm. remembered where it was. But he hasn't reached the point where he's actually blowing the whistle. He's just picking it. He goes, go. And he goes, move it, Webster. Let's get to the boats. Let's go. Stay low. Keep moving. Keep moving. Fall back to the boats now. Fall back. And then we get a shot of Liebgott on the other side. I mean, he didn't get to go on the patrol, but he's still, you know, he's still on the gun on the other side of the river. He goes, Jesus Christ, come on, blow the goddamn whistle. And, you know, after he says that, you know, he hears the whistle being blown. Jones is running, you know, helmetless through all of the explosions, and he starts blowing the whistle. And at this point, you know, Liebgott and the others just start opening fire also in order to give their own men some cover.
Yeah.
And, you know, the men all run towards the boat in order to...
The directions definitely were to be in the boats before you blew the whistle, but it's more dramatic this way.
Exactly.
and this little like scrum getting into the boats is really interesting too, that we end on.
Well, I mean, we see basically these guys are all very frustrated at this point. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, they just want to get back across. And, you know, they start arguing with one of the Germans, and we can see Shifty's getting a little frustrated, and Martin screams and goes, let's go, Shifty. And he goes, I'm going to shoot you, f***ing crowd. Martin goes, you shoot him, and we'll have to come back for more.
And that, boys and girls, goes, is what we call foreshadowing.
You crowd. Yes. Exactly. But it's not foreshadowing, because they say if you kill all these guys, you know, more we're gonna have to have more come. But they only shoot one of the guys. They leave the wounded guy as they're
That's
getting into the boats. Which tomorrow we'll hear a little bit about what they leave on the other side of the on the other side of the river. But yeah, this is a great 5-minute section with Martin really taking control here and showing everybody why he is such a great commander. And he's and I mean we've seen him quite often over the period of this entire series, and he's great. Do you know who
So I looked it up
plays
and it's
Martin?
a great name, Dexter Fletcher, and he's a real that guy, you know, just pops up here and there. I do,
Okay,
because he's
he's
been acting
also a
since the
director.
70s, so
That's
yeah.
right. That's right. He's apparently he was a an actor. He was a child actor in in when in England. Apparently, like everybody knows him from that. But he's also a director.
Yeah, he's
He
like
directed.
more famous
He
now.
directed. That's right. He directed Bohemian Rhapsody. He directed Rocket Man. Eddie the Eagle. He directed 2 episodes of The Offer. The movie about behind the scenes of the making of The Godfather. It's interesting that he's more known as a director than as an actor when he has 6 IMDb credits as director and 113 as an actor. But most people know him now. I mean, he has 2 things in production at this point: The League of Gentlemen and Sherlock Holmes 3. So where he's directing. So that's also pretty impressive.
It's a good time.
Yeah.
He's so good in this. But yeah.
So was there anything else you wanted to add about this particular 5-minute section?
No, I guess I will bid adieu to my buddy Ian Bailey and Colin Hanks and all our friends. And I will get in my own rubber boat and hand over hand off into the sunset.
Okay. Do you think that if they wore helmets, it might have helped Jackson? Do you think maybe the choice to not have helmets in this scene might have killed, sorry, might have injured Jackson?
I don't know, because that looked like more of a face, like an eye face thing. So the helmet wouldn't have helped with that. But it certainly wouldn't have hurt. But I understand for movie purposes why that made decision. And you know what? I don't think it would have made the crucial difference. I think he still would be bleeding and in quite a bit of pain.
Okay, so I'm gonna actually read a little bit from the book that explains what happened here. Now, the commander that took them across in real life was Mercier. It wasn't Martin. So it says Jones and Mercier gathered the men who had made it over, divided them, and set out on their tasks. With Mercier was a just arrived replacement from Company F. Without Spears or Winters knowing it, the young officer, gung-ho and eager to prove himself, had attached himself to the patrol. Again, this is not Jones. As he followed Mercer up the north bank of the river, he stepped on a shoe mine and was killed. He'd been on the front line barely 24 hours. Mercer continued toward his target. 8 men followed him. When he got close enough to the German outpost, he fired a rifle grenade into the cellar window. As it exploded, the men rushed the building and threw hand grenades into the cellar. As those grenades exploded, Mercer led the men into the cellar. So close behind the blast that Private Eugene Jackson, a replacement who joined up in Holland, was hit in the face and head by fragments of shrapnel. In the cellar, the Americans found the still living Germans in a state of shock. They grabbed 1 wounded and 2 uninjured men and dashed back outside. Mercier blew his whistle. The signal unleashed a tremendous barrage, shook the ground. Heavy artillery from the rear was supplemented by mortars and the anti-tank gun. Webster, watching from the balcony of OP2, described the scene. See, in real life, Webster wasn't even there. We saw a sheet of flame, then a red ball shoot into the basement of a dwelling across the creek. The artillery shells flashed orange on the German roads and strong points. Half a mile away to our direct front, a house started to burn. B Company's 50 caliber opened up behind us in a steady bark. A solid stream of tracers shot up the creek, provoking a duel with a German burp gun, which hosed just as steady a stream of tracers back at D Company for the protection of an undamaged cellar. Mercier and his men dashed back to the boats, where they met Jones and his section. As they started to cross, they decided that the wounded German soldier was too far gone to be of any use, so they abandoned him on the riverbank. One of the replacements, Private Vest, drew a pistol to kill the man, but was told to hold his fire. The wounded German was not going to do them any harm, and there's no point to revealing their position. Some men swam, using the rope to pull themselves back across. Others used the boats. So, interesting the way that that they change things here. I mean, they do change the fact that, they have to climb upstairs as opposed to going into a cellar to grab the prisoners.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that would make it more claustrophobic.
It would make it more claustrophobic, but it
And
would make more sense that Jackson got hit by an explosion because they're close by. Here they shoot a rifle grenade onto the second floor. He has to run up the floor and then it explodes. That's part of the thing.
yeah, it's a little more victim blamey of Jackson rushing in this way.
So the whole way that this happens, it again, it's not exactly the same way of what happened in real life, but it doesn't matter. I mean, they use the dramatic license really well here because,
Yeah, and it's very close. Like,
it's very close.
he
And
kept
because Mercier
some of
isn't one of
it.
the characters, so they just replace him with Martin, and Dexter
Yeah.
Fletcher just does a great job showing us what type of commander he can be, when he's out in the field, making sure his men are as safe as possible along the way. So I really like the way that they do that. All right, so today's segment is called "Oh Brother," where my guest will give their top five movie brothers. So, Tierney, once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay. Well, I actually, well, yeah, I'll do number five and I'll do number five is A Night at the Roxbury. I didn't write down the brothers' names. I just wrote down the
That's
movie
fine. That's
names.
fine.
The 1998 classic. Again, I always do these from the top down, so I'm feeling a little punchy by the time I get to five. Number four, Sabrina. The original, the 95 remake, take your pick. They're both great in different, like, both of them have great moments. Both of them have moments that could have done better. Both great movies.
I actually like the original much better. Even though I do love Harrison Ford and Greg Kinnear. I think they're great in that role, but I just think the original does it much better.
The original, I feel like the Sabrina side, but then also she has so much more agency in the 95 one. The whole like romance between her and Linus is much more convincing in the 95 one. The mother is hilarious, actually, in both. But yeah, that's why I say, like, you're not gonna go wrong either way. Number three, I have Little Giants, a 1994 movie with Rick Moranis and I'm gonna forget his name, but he's very well known as brothers with rival Pee Wee football teams, a classic of my generation. Number two is 1998's Mouse Hunt, about two brothers that inherit a old mansion from their deceased father, and shenanigans ensue. And then number one is kind of cheating. I put The Godfather Part 1 and 2 because, like, come on, how are you going to separate those out? Like, of which one's better of depicting the brother relationship? Come on. And for your listeners, I have an honorable mention just because I have not watched it in 20 years, so I don't remember. Like, I remember loving it, but I'm like, I don't actually know that it holds up. The movie Four Brothers came out in 2005, and I justified not including it because it's about four adopted brothers, but it's I just remember really loving that movie, and I was like, oh, I gotta include Four Brothers. And then I was like reading the description, and I'm like, this is as good as I remember it being. Like, maybe, this might not hold up. And of course, I was making this list too close to recording to watch an entire movie.
That's the movie with Mark Wahlberg.
Yes. There's a Wahlberg. Oh God, who else? The cast is phenomenal. Like, you
Tyrese
recognize
Gibson,
everyone.
Garrett Hedlund, Terrence Howard, Josh Charles. Oh wow, Sofia Vergara. Wow, I need to see this. I've never seen this movie. Interesting.
It literally was someone recommended it, and I was like, yeah, whatever, it's Friday night, pop it on. And we all were like, that was way better than we were expecting.
That's always nice.
But again, it's very violent, so maybe we were just enjoying that because our prefrontal cortexes had not developed yet. I don't know.
It's
So,
always a possibility.
yeah, but I justified it where I'm like, I mean, technically, they're not related brothers. The other ones on my list are. They're like exploring the brother relationship.
That works. I think that's a great list. Thank you very much for that. And now we will play for one more time the name that World War II movie.
Okay, let's do this. Come
All
on, last
right.
time.
Let's spin the wheel. See what you get. Like I said, maybe you'll get something that we've talked about over the last few days. Doesn't look like it. Nope.
Oh no. Is it something that has a movies by minutes
No,
about
sorry,
it?
that's not gonna happen either. But it comes close, and you'll understand why in a
Okay.
second when I explain that what this movie is. So this is a movie from 1955. Okay, and
Okay.
it's about RAF pilots who are sent to destroy six dams in Germany during World War II. And this movie, one second, and this movie is famous for the fact that it is very much loved by George Lucas, who used it as the basis for the attack on the Death Star. And he did a lot of shots for shots from
Yes.
it.
Yes, it's a but oh God, but what is the name of it? Is it just no, it's not just Aria. Okay. Let's damn. It's not part of the Churchill quote. I know there are a bunch about them that use the like never have so many or so few. It's not. It's something with flu. It's like they flew or those that flew or something. Am I
No,
in the right
but one
realm?
of the words in the title is something that I used in the description. I don't know if that helps at all. Would you like me to read the description once again? Okay.
Yes, please.
A drama based on the attempt by the RAF to destroy six dams in Germany during World War II.
Oh, I'm thinking of like the documentaries. Oh crap. But it uses one of those words. So, shoot, I do not know. I was thinking of the documentaries. Sorry. I'm giving up
Okay,
because
the answer
I
is
don't
the Dam
know
Busters.
what. Oh, okay. Damn,
Yeah,
yikes.
and this was written by the book was written by Paul Brickhill, who also wrote The Great Escape.
Okay. Okay.
And
Nice.
a few weeks ago, I talked about another one of his books, which is really interesting, that there are so many books by Paul Bridgel that have been made into movies.
Oh. Ooh, yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to watch
Exactly.
this
So yeah,
one.
it's
Oh, docudrama. Okay, so I wasn't crazy.
well,
Whew. All
it's
right.
so true.
Okay.
That's what it's not like made up.
No. I just was having a moment where I was like questioning my entire personality as a teenager of wanting to be George Lucas, and I'm like, wait a minute. But okay, all right. I feel a lot better now. Yay. I will. That's good. I love this. I have like a good watch list for
Very
this
cool.
weekend.
It's unfortunate that that question didn't go to Alex when he was on. Wonder
Oh,
if he
that
would
would
have
have been
done
perfect.
that. Maybe yes, maybe All right. So, Journey, is there anything else you want to say about Band of Brothers?
No, thank you for the excuse to
You're
rewatch
very
it.
welcome. I'm glad that you decided to rewatch it for it and not just watch your little segments.
No, I watched the whole, I watched up to my segment and took my notes, and then I
Okay,
watched the
that works
rest.
well. That works well. Excellent. All right, so Tierney, would you like to tell people how they can find Tierney Steele?
How do you find Tierney Steele? Well, over the rainbow. No, I'm just kidding.
Maybe.
I do have a website, onesteelsister.com. There's links to my podcast, my guest spots, the book I wrote. I'm working on the sequel now. It's going very slowly, but it will
Well,
eventually
because you just had to
exist.
watch 10 hours of Band of Brothers.
I'm very good at avoiding my responsibilities by coming up with new, different
Okay.
responsibilities. yeah, I'm not really big on social media, but if you go on like Instagram or Threads, I will see it eventually. yeah, that's the best way to find me. Oh no, I'm still on Facebook. I will see that too. I don't trust their notifications. It's gotten really weird of like what they show me versus what they don't. But yeah, that's the best place to find me. And I haven't really been doing podcasts lately. I've mostly just been guesting on other people's shows so that I don't have to do
There you go.
nearly as much work as
The way
you.
to do it. All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, Tierney, thank you very much for joining me once again.
Great to be here. Thanks so much.
And it's been fun talking to you about these things, about these 15 minutes that could have been just 10 minutes. And that's right. And
Less than
I will
10
be back
minutes.
tomorrow with another guest. But until then, curry!
Great.